Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron, very much. And thank you, everybody. I'm going to start my stopwatch to make sure that I don't overrun my time. A fascinating theme of discussion, understanding what students want and need, and a few guiding principles I was going to suggest for the start of my 15-minute canter through expectations and perceptions. And I'd like to start with the first and most important point to me, which is how we manage to move the debate beyond the anecdotal and the way in which, in the past, a lot of concerns and issues around student expectations and the student experience have been driven by press reports of isolated individual incidents, and the importance of having measures in place that enable us to have, at an institution level and at a sector level, a substantive set of indicators, not just of perceptions but of expectations too. And there's already been talk, I think, of survey fatigue and whether we spend too much time asking students what they think. I certainly do think that students are probably the most surveyed population on the planet. But that doesn't remove the fact that there is a need for an intelligent dialogue. And in fact, that's probably the next step, the next stage, beyond having a careers survey, an accommodation survey, a safety survey, departmental surveys, central surveys, library, and everybody else wanting to know what students say, to finding a way to establish an intelligent dialogue with students and a sustained approach to feedback. There is still occasionally, aside from the statutory NSS type of reporting, there's still occasionally at an institution level the feeling that we asked students 2 or 3 years ago what they thought, so we don't need to ask them again for a while. And of course, expectations are changing year on year, and equally, students' perceptions will change year on year. So, in my view, I think it's vital that we do have, and many of you would expect me to say this, of course, a whole of institution picture. There's very interesting points you were raising about recognizing the importance of tracking what postgraduate or graduate students are thinking as well as undergraduates, and in my view, looking at what's happening across all years of experience, not just across levels of experience too, because my perceptions of my experience in my first few weeks in Swansea University will determine how I feel for months ahead. If you wait until the middle of the final year to ask me, it's too late to make a difference. And so my view is we should always be looking at a whole of institution picture, all years and all levels. But the other thing that I think is vital is that we make sure we're able to compare findings externally. And while there are many criticisms made of the NSS, I guess the one good thing that's come from it has enabled institutions to compare publicly. The downside is, of course, that students by now should know the right answer to an NSS question. I mean, it doesn't make much sense to say I'm not happy with this if it's going to affect the published league tables. And what instead we've been seeing in parallel to that is the development of more intelligent benchmarking, the unpublished kind, where institutions can get a sense of what's working, where they're surpassing rivals, and where they can pay particular attention to concerns of students. And in that sense, I think we are reaching a point of opinion data becoming a core metric for decision-making in the way that we used to work from academic performance data, financial indicators, and so on, that we've now found that opinion data has reached that level. But I don't want to leave this point yet of expectation versus satisfaction, the point that you raised earlier on. Student satisfaction is just half of the job, isn't it? The other half of it is managing expectations more effectively. And what we've seen, what I've seen from my work particularly, is that some, for example, infrastructure aspects and questions that are very difficult to change simply by, even if you do throw money at it, you can't geographically change the fact of where you are or the context of the facilities and buildings that you have. But I think there, what is important is that we manage expectations just as closely as we keep a handle on what students are saying in terms of satisfaction. And, of course, some expectations are completely unreasonable and unrealistic. And I do agree that moving beyond the kind of early students as consumers debate, it is trying to work out, again, from this intelligent dialogue, what is reasonable and helping students to understand what they can expect and what is beyond reason. And I guess I've got some data on this in a moment that I'll share with you, but around outcomes and the mention that was made earlier on, graduate outcomes in particular, being perhaps the most important measure of all, I think increasingly they will become so. But I do hope that we move very quickly beyond just looking at what students and graduates are doing 6 months out. There was a recent graduate interviewed on Radio 4 this morning talking about what it was like working in a bar and working in voluntary work, trying to work out what to do next. And rather than focusing on those outcomes 6 months out, that we look at career trajectories in a more intelligent way and track how it is that universities shape the careers, what part we play in shaping the careers of our graduates and how they reflect back on that experience. But most importantly, that question of alumni engagement, how they continue to connect with their institution. So, brief explanation about iGraduate. Our work is specifically benchmarking student and stakeholder perceptions, not because we love data, but because what we're interested in doing is informing and encouraging institutional enhancement across the sector and internationally. And so the vast majority of our work is focused on current students in particular, although we do also track the expectations of prospective students, increasingly working with alumni, not just in terms of, as I said, those immediate graduate outcomes, but looking across multiple cohorts, how they're reflecting back on their experience. And you can see other stakeholder groups that that we work with as well there. So why should we care about student expectations? I guess we're all assuming it's important, but it might be worth reminding ourselves that whether we're about the pursuit of excellence, the advancement of knowledge, or simply self-preservation, in the end, we need to recognize today that personal recommendation in some form is the single greatest influence on choice of institution. There aren't many people who will simply read a book or a guide and say, I've decided where I want to go, without asking somebody who's there already. And of course, these days, everybody has the ability to ask somebody who's there. And so now more than ever, while there has been relevant talk about prospectuses and the content and the promise that's presented in a prospectus, I think it's what today's students are saying about this year's experience that more than ever will determine future student flows. And clearly, evidently, the smartest universities have worked that out some time ago. So the key to influencing opinion is not building a better brand or reinventing our marketing materials, but in fact hardwiring that marketing connection with the student experience, ensuring that we're meeting and exceeding expectations. And in the wider context, while it's still very limited outward mobility, although I know, Aaron, you're doing more to encourage more students to head out from the UK to study, faced with a world of choice, we do need to work to ensure the experience is world-class. And of course, most significantly, with the huge wealth of knowledge and financial resource that's brought to this country, the capability that's brought by international students, and recognising that they could decide to study anywhere but are choosing our institutions instead. So how do we measure expectations and perceptions? Well, many of you will be aware of this, but our work began with a group of UK universities in 2005. Who decided that they wanted to track expectations and to be able to compare them. And I put those logos up to acknowledge their vision in saying it would be great to find a way of being able to understand an aggregate, but also to be able to compare between us. And that group has grown now. We've taken feedback from, in fact, over 1.3 million students. The processes of taking regular student feedback in this barometer process have been implemented by over 110 UK universities. But then, interestingly, to see how others have followed. So, in fact, it's now almost all the Australian universities and many of the other providers of higher education in Australia, in New Zealand, in Germany, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, and so on. And so this lead that was taken, and it was a very clear and evident lead taken, an initiative taken by British universities, has now been followed by others around the world. What is interesting and challenging is to recognize how quickly they're responding to the feedback that they have and the comparative perceptions of students, reminding us that however much of an island we might have been, we do now need to keep in constant vision and awareness of how quickly systems and providers are changing their delivery internationally. So that's an indication of the scale of the take-up of this kind of comparative insight of expectations and perceptions. Most of you in this room, almost all in this room, will be familiar with this, but I think an important point to make is that it's a light-touch process, the barometer process, that it's confidential in terms of student responses and also unpublished in terms of institutional data. A constant challenge to work out how do we highlight excellence in teaching, for example, when there's not a publication of all the data. But what we feel is that students being able to report in confidence are able to report frankly how they feel, and institutions are able to work much more effectively as a result of that. A very comprehensive scope when we're looking at the student experience, and the question was raised already this morning, how wide should we look with the traditional view and, in fact, the NSS view predominantly around the teaching and learning side. But in our view, asking new students about their decision-making, what helped them to choose, the perceptions of the application process, their experience of the application process. For international students, their experience of the great challenges around the visa process. But also those vital first days that I've referred to already around arrival and orientation. And then towards the end of the academic cycle, picking up on other points that have been raised already today around contact hours, teaching hours, and so on, study hours, We ask students' perceptions, not just how many hours a week they're spending on different elements of their studies, but whether they think there's too many or too few hours of formal lectures, for example. And then, vitally, questions around future plans and career intentions. And, of course, in all stages, asking students about their learning experience, their living experience, and working in terms of their usage and satisfaction with support services as well. So students in this current academic year, in the academic cycle that we're in now, we're providing feedback from October to December, and so I'm going to give you some real numbers from that. Feedback from over 124,000 students in UK universities. The process, by the way, was simply an email from a senior, either vice-chancellor or a senior member of the university, to students, encouraging them to give their feedback, an email and two reminders, nothing more than that. So not the extent of students being pursued into their study rooms to answer questions. And that contributing to a global benchmark of over 280,000 students. What I thought would be helpful for you to see is that in terms of overall satisfaction, it is a very, very superficial and subjective measure, I think. If you're asking us all here how satisfied we are, well, it's Tuesday morning, it's about lunchtime, I'm reasonably satisfied, but I might feel different tomorrow. But politicians in particular, and one I know certainly loves a single indicator, here it is, 90% of international students satisfied and 92% of home students satisfied. And so if we wanted to, we could all go back to our own vice-chancellors saying, nothing to worry about, almost everybody's satisfied. Of course, what we then want to do is understand what's happened to that 10% or 8% who are dissatisfied at this time in the year, and then begin to look in more detail, of course, at how those satisfaction indicators break down. So we do ask students just generally overall for new arrivals, how satisfied are you with the arrival experience? 87% and 91% satisfied there. Home students finding it easier in those early days than international students. But very high satisfaction for the living experience and the learning indicators as well. But you might already have started to home in on the lower part of the screen. I think some very interesting differentiators here. Where students, generally there's very little difference in terms of home versus international. The same things matter, the same things are important. Expectations may be similarly high. But isn't it interesting to note that just in this current academic cycle, what we're seeing is where home students are significantly less satisfied, course organisation, performance feedback, marking criteria, and careers advice, which is careers advice in the learning context. So for those alarm bells that have been raised before around performance feedback, isn't it interesting to see that, in fact, international students at the moment, generally, are currently more forgiving than our home students. But talking around expectations, I've picked out here the difference between what international students and home students are saying around careers, expectations of careers support. Home students, as you see in the top panel here, are significantly more likely to be looking for the traditional information, advice, and guidance around careers. But the one that I think we have to watch most closely is that penultimate point there, employment, securing a job for me. 30% of international students in the UK now, in this current academic cycle, are expecting their university to get them a job. And I'd like to suggest that that partly may be unrealistic expectations, but it partly might also be sometimes a minor confusion. When we talk about employability, there are many people who will interpret that as employment. And very interesting to see how expectations and perceptions are changing over time. Indicators against the global index, generally we're seeing the UK performing well. If we want to say we're world class, generally we can do. But of course what's important is to measure against particular countries which may be outperforming, although at the global level, at a kind of global basket level, we're generally performing well. Opportunities to teach are asked of research students. We appear to be behind on that. And I think we're all probably aware of the difficulties many students have in opening a bank account for international students. That is harder here than elsewhere. So, but coming back to my point about the extent to which students will recommend the experience, we do need to understand there is a very wide range of perceptions. In this example, the active ambassadors we're describing here is the percentage of students at institutions who would actively encourage others to follow in their footsteps. The green, the light green, those that are passively positive and have to be asked to encourage others. What's interesting is to see where we can learn from each other across the sector, and also, most importantly, how we can raise the bar. And a big part of that is understanding the differences within our own institutions. If we take this example of performance feedback at an institution level, every one of the numbers along the bottom represents a different school in that university. Helpful once you begin to split them up by faculty and to recognise there's no one faculty that's getting performance feedback right. There's no one place which is better than all the others, generally. And what we need to do is look again at how we can share best practice and recognise we can learn from each other within the institution. And equally look at how we can in future raise the bar in terms of overall satisfaction. It's important to aggregate the data, and what we now deliver to most of you is interactive maps enabling you to compare perceptions by nationality of students who are studying in the UK currently. But talking about those that are studying in the UK, we do need to recognise there's around 1,600 institutions delivering UK higher education, over 400,000 students studying outside the UK. What do those students think and how does the experience compare? We haven't got time today to find out, but we should talk about that more. It's something we're working on very closely. I mentioned the importance of tracking satisfaction and against recommendation. And here what we've looked at are what are the three factors for domestic students that are most likely to impact on their propensity to recommend in this current academic cycle. And course organisation has the strongest correlation. So if you're satisfied with course organisation, you're more likely to recommend. If you're dissatisfied, you're more likely to not to recommend your experience. It's an interesting course organisation, course content, so the kind of administrative dimension of teaching and learning, plus employability as the top three elements. I've got another seven or eight of them there. And for PGT students, course organisation also coming out at the top. That's for domestic students. For international students, undergraduates, employability, the number one factor. In fact, when I say number one, we've seen a similar correlation between the quality of lectures and course content too. We could spend about half a day on each of those and on how international student perceptions have improved over time, but I am just about out of time. So I'll finish by saying, where before we used to see student feedback as about inviting student feedback in the form of a survey, collecting it, aggregating, comparing and reporting back, what I think we're beginning to see increasingly and reassuringly is institutions closing the loop, looking at how they disaggregate the information, how you break it down at an institution level, how you disseminate it vitally, how you get that feedback out through departments and schools, interpreted, prioritised, resources allocated, changes implemented, and reviewing that process before going back to students to measure what's happened. The way in which we typically report this has been in Excel and PowerPoint format, but what's been very interesting to see is the way in which universities like the University of Oxford have taken a fully integrated approach, replacing multiple internal surveys, but most importantly, finding a way of taking all of that feedback data and making it accessible to senior staff for them to sort and sift and argue over between themselves before working out what they're going to do to make a difference. And I think that is the vital next stage, the speed with which we can connect feedback to working on that feedback, making changes and implementing it. And so we've got some screen grabs that I'll leave on the subsequent thing showing how within departments, individuals can sort their own data, filter it by gender, by level of study, right down to course level through preloading the survey process so that you can compare satisfaction with elements, feedback in this example, by a course within a department, for that department to do something about it, to look at how they can help the institution overall. And that's a university that's never going to have to worry about student numbers in theory. Finally, you may have picked up in the Times Higher this week reference to the University of Oxford's careers website, and this is a work that we do in partnership with Oxford, reporting their destinations of leavers process. What's interesting is going, I have to recognise it's Valentine's Day today and nobody's talked about going beyond the kiss without mentioning it in passing. I thought I had to make the connection at some point. But interesting to see how Oxford has gone in this sense, very specifically beyond the kiss, by publishing openly all of that data, not just by subject and field of study, but also by college, a major leap forward in terms of openness and saying, look, we need to recognise that we have to work with this type of data at an institution level as much as anything. And some, I think, a very positive reporting on that in the Times Higher this week. So in summary, embed the insight process, compare and track the experience. Remember, Will says we should be doing it across all years and all levels every year. But most importantly, in order to empower colleagues to enable change and get on with it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from PolicyReview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.